Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Do your friends really like you? New research out of MIT finds half the time the feelings we have about our friends are not mutual. It's a surprising finding. Maybe it's always been so. Layers and forms of friendship can be misinterpreted or mislabeled. Maybe it's about how we gauge our social interactions in today's digital world. Maybe it's time to re-examine some of our relationships. This hour on Point, do your friends really like you? We take a deeper look at what defines a true, real friend. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What is a real friend, one you're sure about? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now via Skype is Alex Sandy Pentland, computational social science researcher at MIT. He's co-author of the new study, Are You Your Friend's Friend? You can link to the study at our website, onpointradio.org. Sandy Pentland, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So this the summary of this flew all over the internet. People kind of freaked out. Did you really find that something like half of the people we think of as our friends don't share that same perception of us?
Absolutely. It's not only is it just one study, but there's a large high school study, a study in Europe, study in Asia, study in the Middle East. It seems to be something that's true everywhere.
How did you figure this out? What kind of questions? How did the research ascertain this?
Well, what we did to sort of first notice it is we took a small community and we asked everybody how close they were to everybody else. What sort of friendship relationships did they have? And what we noticed is when you went through all of these lists of everybody, that only about half of the time were things mutual. The other half of time, the one you maybe listed top or second, they didn't list you until way down the list.
So you're asking them, you put it on a 5-point scale of how close they were to somebody else, from I don't know this person to one of my best friends.
Yep.
And it was half the time they misgauged it. I mean, but it's funny because people expected that however they felt about that other person, that it would be reciprocal. 94% of the time they expected that that person would see them the same way.
Yep, exactly. So somehow people are really bad at this. And the point of the research was to find out who's really got your back, who's going to help you get through hard times, change. The study was about, you know, losing weight, being more active, things like that. And question was, who's going to help you? And then we discovered that the people that really help you are only half of the people that you think are going to help you, as is the bottom line on that. You it's did, those mutual friends that get you through it.
You did that with a fairly small community of 80 or so, 80 plus, but you've got other research out here that's looked at 92,000 subjects and found in generally the same range of misjudgment of who thinks what about whom when it comes to friendship.
Yep. So this wasn't our study. It was another national study of 90,000 high school students that found that that's just true pretty much generally, males, females. So it's pretty general thing. Similarly, studies in other parts of the world find pretty much exactly the same thing, young people, old people. It seems to do it. And the thing that people seem to be misjudging or confusing is there are people that have lots and lots of friends. They're very high status in one sense, okay, right? They're the connectors. And I might say, oh, that person's my friend, but that guy has 100 friends. They're just like crazy. And I'm not going to make the list of the top 5 or top 10 just because they've got so many people.
You write in your abstract here that we find people are typically poor at perceiving the directionality of their friendship ties.
That's right.
And you say this can significantly limit their ability to engage in cooperative arrangements. I mean, cooperative arrangements is what we like to think friendship is all about. You sort of, one way or another, you help each other out in this world. Your results of your research seem to point out why that may fail fairly often.
That's exactly right. So if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to do something that's, you know, get the community together, 50% of the time, you're likely to reach out to people who really actually aren't going to help that much. And what you should be doing is finding these mutual friends. And so one of the nice things that the paper does is it gives you a recipe for identifying who it is you should be reaching out to.
Oh, let's hear the recipe, because everybody wants to know. I'm sure they're going to hold it up against their roster of friends and try and picture who's for real and who maybe isn't.
Well, that's a good idea. So here's the two things you want to pay attention to. Do they have a lot more friends than you? If they do, it may not be mutual. And if you look at their friends, do they have a lot of the same friends that you do? In other words, are they part of the same group generally? And if the answer of those two things is no, in other words, they don't have about the same number of friends as you do, and a lot of the friends are not the same people, then that person is likely not to be a really good mutual friend.
Let me just put it a different way, though, Sandy. Could there possibly be value to people who you see as your friend, even if they don't reciprocate entirely, but you still feel that way? I mean, you take the survey and say, yeah, that's my friend. Maybe they give you psychic comfort, even if it's not completely reciprocal, even if they don't feel as close to you as you feel to them. Maybe it's still good for your sense of well-being.
Well, there is this sort of being in with the popular people, right, that we all get from junior high. So that's part of it. But I think a more functional thing is, if you're trying to spread a message, then the people that have lots and lots of friends are good spreaders. So they're a different function. They're sort of getting the word out, but they're not going to be the people that have your back.
Do you really believe your own research? Have you gone and looked at your, you know, stable of friends since you did it and pictured half of them not really giving a hoot about you?
That's saying it too strong. They give a hoot about you. They're friendly, but, you know, they're pretty busy. Too busy to deal with me, right? All the time. They may do a special favor. So it's not that it's a negative thing. It's not like these are nasty people or something. They're just, they have lots and lots of friends. It's a different community. And so if you're looking for someone who's going to provide close-in support, that's not them. If you're looking for someone to spread the word, like, you know, you're starting a new enterprise or moving into a new phase of your life and you want people to know about it, they're brilliant for that.
Wow. You really got to think about what you want your friends for and just how deep those friendships may be. Alex Sandy Pentland is co-author of the study, Are You Your Friend's Friend? Out of MIT. Sandy, thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure.
Let's talk with a philosopher of friendship. Alexander Nehemas joins us, professor of philosophy, comparative literature at Princeton University, author of On Friendship. Alexander Nehemas, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
Are you shocked, dismayed, and disillusioned by the results of this study?
Well, yes. I mean, it's quite depressing to hear something like that, to learn something like that. It shows how bad we are at gauging our relationship with other people. But, you know, in some way, it's not that unexpected. I mean, we are really bad about knowing ourselves. Imagine how much more difficult it must be to know somebody else. I mean, it's a strange situation.
But the idea of a friend is that you do know. Those are the people that you do have a kind of transparency with, isn't it? That you, I know your mind and you know mine, and therefore we're friends.
It's exactly right. And the trouble is that we often think we know the mind of someone else. We know their history. We know their motivations. We know their likes. And in fact, we don't. I think to some extent that has to do with the fact that what we could call friendly behavior is taken to be an expression of friendship. But friendly behavior is not always an expression of friendship. So if you, I hope not, but if you happen to be sick, I could come and visit you for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I could be very nice to you while I'm visiting you. I can bring you flowers. I can do all those things. Because why? Because I might think it's the right thing to do. I might think I can get something out of you. I can get, you know, another spot on your show if I come and see you at the hospital. And you can interpret easily my behavior as friendship, but it isn't. It's at best friendliness. One reason I think that this comes up like that is that you can't generally judge whether somebody is a friend of yours or a friend of someone else just by seeing the behavior in one or two situations or in one or two contexts. Friendship is something that takes time to establish itself. It takes time to realize that you're friends with someone. Very often, you know, you don't know that you're friends with somebody.
Yes,
you know,
true.
You don't know that you're becoming friends with somebody until you had already become their friend. So there are a lot of ifs and unknowns and variables in a situation like that.
Real friendship often kind of sneaks up on you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there you are, you know, you see somebody every now and then, you exchange a few words here, a few words there. And one day you realize, you know, you really like them. You'd like to go out with them on Saturday with their family, or you want to spend time with them talking at the cafe or whatever. It's a very, very complex situation altogether. If I may say something else,
yes.
I took a look at the report, the study. I think it's absolutely fascinating. But there's an assumption in there that's very interesting. The assumption is that it's always good when people are mutual friends, and it's always good when they help each other.
Is there something wrong with that assumption?
I think so. I think there is, and it's worth discussing for a minute when we have time.
Let's come right back after a short break here. Alexander Nehemas, professor of philosophy at Princeton, author of On Friendship. Please stand by there. Amy Dickinson joins us when we return. We'll go out right here with We're Going to Be Friends from the White Stripes. We're talking friendship. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
We don't notice any time pass. We don't notice anything. We sit side by side in every class. Teacher thinks that I sound funny, but she likes the way you sing. Tonight I'll dream while I'm in bed, when silly thoughts go through my head about the bugs and alphabet. When I wake tomorrow, I'll bet that you and I will walk together again. I can tell that we are going to be friends.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new research that says only about half the people we think of as our friends really like us, and what that says about what friendship really is, what it means. Alexander Nehemas is with us. He's professor of philosophy, comparative literature at Princeton University, author of On Friendship. Amy Dickinson joins us in just a moment. You know her from her syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, often a featured panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can join us this hour as well. Does this make sense to you, that half our friends don't really like us all that much? And think about it. Do you feel that way somehow about half of your friends? Should we freak out about this, or is it just the way it is? Can you be friends with someone you don't entirely like? Among the high-profile female friendships in America is that between talk show host and producer Oprah Winfrey and CBS This Morning co-anchor Gayle King. In 2010, Barbara Walters asked Winfrey to describe her friendship with King.
She is the mother I never had. She is the sister everybody would want. She is the friend that everybody deserves. I don't know a better person. I don't know a better person.
Why is it making you cry?
Shoot, wasn't going to cry here. It's making me cry because I'm thinking about how much I probably have never told her that.
Oh, Oprah, don't cry. But it's good to hear. It's good to hear friendship expressed like that. Let's hear it in another direction. This was writer Ian McKellen and actor Patrick Stewart talked about their friendship during a Yahoo Movies interview pegged to the release of the X-Men film a couple years back, Days of Future Past. You know, they were first Patrick Stewart, then Ian McKellen, friends.
We're both of us passionate about Shakespeare and being in the theatre, and we went to the RSC to learn our job.
I love Patrick. He's a lovable man. He's a sweet man, and not all people are, but and he's got this stern exterior, and he plays these very powerful characters. But he's just as frail as we all are, and I just want to give him a hug at times.
Okay, they sound like they like each other, actors Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart right there. It doesn't always work so well. Here's an interview on YouTube documentary channel Capture Your Flag, and there's host Eric Michelson talking with author Simon Sinek about friendship. And Sinek says he realized recently that he uses the word friend too loosely.
You know, I have 25 500 or 2,300, who knows, friends on Facebook. They're not my friends. Like, they're nice people. I like them, I think. If I met them, I don't know. I haven't met most of them. But we clearly share common interests, which is why we became friends on Facebook, and that's good. But they're not my friends. My friends are people who, if I'm in a time of need, they will be there for me no matter what.
Okay, so it's got to be more than being friended or friending on Facebook. Alexander Demos, please stand by in Princeton, New Jersey. With us right now from Ithaca, New York, is Amy Dickinson. You know her from her advice column, Ask Amy, maybe from NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Amy Dickinson, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Are you shocked, dismayed, and freaking out to learn that research says half of your friends may not think you're all that awesome?
Not in the slightest.
Or it's just not true for you, Amy. They all think you're awesome.
Well, of course. I'm so fantastic. No. And it could be because in my life as an advice columnist, I deal with questions about relationships all the time. Mm-hmm. And I am very well acquainted with the imbalance of that friendship. You know, friendships in distress feel very imbalanced, just as true Gail King, Oprah mm-hmm. Winfrey friendship feels very balanced and very intimate and like a mutual partnership.
Yeah.
But it is rare. It's very rare. And so, and I don't know about the assertion that a lot of our friends don't like us very much. I think that some of this conversation, mm-hmm. we're reducing it to this transactional relationship mm-hmm. when the fact is there are levels of friendships. And this is what I love about this study, is it shows that most of us have very few at the tippy top, the daily intimate friends. And then our friendship models fall into various categories, people we enjoy connecting with occasionally. Mm-hmm. And then there are people who we see very seldom, but when we see them, we're really delighted to see and be with them. But, you know, I thought of another friendship from popular culture, yeah. I wanted to share it. This yeah. is classic.
Okay.
Dwight Schrute and Michael Scott. Dwight Schrute on The Office was always okay. saying to Michael Scott, "You're my best friend, Michael." Right, and right. Michael would go like, not so much.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you're right. As Sandy was saying earlier, it's not that they might dislike you, but more often it's just that they see the friendship at a different level or intensity than you do, right? You see it maybe as a top 10 and they see it as a top 100 or... Not
right. Near, and one thing I find very helpful about this whole conversation is that it's so useful to really kind of dive deep and think about your relationships and think, how do other people see me? How mm-hmm. do other people feel about me? And I just think that's a very, very valuable thing to do periodically.
I mean, it's interesting. Alexander, we asked on Facebook, it's an honest question. Do your friends actually like you? At On Point Radio on Facebook. And all kinds of responses. But, you know, Robert says, I don't care, right? If my friends, I don't know what that's about. You're friends, but they don't like you. I don't care. Tate says, I'd be willing to bet only 1/4 of my friends, quote unquote, like me. So this maybe goes to that sense that there's something that's comforting, even if they're not as crazy about you as you are about them. But Kimmeth writes, she says, I'm still trying to decide how much to care. I think if you go through a really hard time in your life, you care less how much they like you or fluff your ego, as long as they show up when you really need them. I don't even like my two very best friends all the time, but if either needs me, I will show up. I will be there for them if at all possible. Is that good enough, more than good enough, Alexander?
I don't know that saying that I would just be there whenever they need me is enough to make you a friend of someone. I really don't think so. It has to be, again, a much more multifaceted relationship. With a friend, you must share some interests, although, of course, it's always very easy to have friends whose interests are exactly the opposite, at least in some ways, than yours. That's what's so funny about saying that, you know, we become friends when our interests are the same. That may happen in Facebook, but in reality, there are many things that my best friends do that I have absolutely no interest in. There are other things that they're interested in that they got me to be interested in. They do that. Friends do that. And I think that tallies with a study that says when there is a mutuality in the relationship, you can really affect the other person's behavior. But very often, I mean, my best friend likes chopping wood. Oh, my God, I would never, never do anything like that. You know, it's very interesting. Flaubert in his book Bouvard and Pécuchet, which is about two rather silly men who become friends and can't accomplish anything actually through it, says, why is it that what makes us love someone in a particular case is exactly the same thing that makes us hate someone else? So the same feature that I see in you may be completely and like you for may be something that I hate somebody else.
Explain that. How can that be, Alexander?
Well, you know, when supposing that I said to you, look, I really like you because you're so intelligent. Well, that suggests that it is not you that I like but your intelligence.
Yeah.
But it's not true. Because even though somebody might appear that is impossible to believe, but more intelligent than you, that doesn't mean I will immediately go on and become their friend rather than yours. And we try to explain that or to express it by saying it's not your intelligence I like. It's your particular intelligence. It's the way you show your intelligence.
Yes.
The difference here is immense. In a true friendship, in a real friendship, where there's mutuality, I don't mean that a really necessarily a deep friendship, but a mutual friendship, it's the very individual that we like. It is not a general account. It's not as if I have a general account of what I want my friends to be and then apply it to you and see, do you meet my six or seven criteria or whatever. It is the very special person that you are. And that makes, I think, a huge difference.
Something about because that chemistry.
The particular chemistry. That's why I think it's very difficult to call Facebook friends friends. First of all, you just give them generic features of yours. That's what they know. They know that you did this yesterday or that you have this particular interest or whatever. They don't yet know you as a person. How can 2,500 people know somebody as a person just by things that you post? No, no, no. These are different kinds of relationships.
Amy Dickinson, we're going to dig into how you figure out, make friends, figure out who's a real, what's a real mutual friendship. We have a lot of callers here as well, though, if I may. Broomfield, Colorado, Linda is calling. Hi, Linda, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say a few years ago, my daughter got married. And I think that's when you really find out who your friends are. And I think I've just come to the realization that people are acquaintances more than they are friends.
What, you mean your daughter got married and some people were interested in it and some weren't? Some people came to the wedding and some didn't?
Yes. Yeah, and they, if you ask a lot of people who have kids that have gotten married, that's when they say they find out who their really true friends are.
I mean, surely your friends would come to your daughter's wedding if you invited them. That's a pretty good dividing line, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's when I found out who were friends. But I think what I came to the realization of that most people are acquaintances. And I think people get that mixed up between, you know, they say they're friends. But I think for most people, we have acquaintances in life. We don't have really true good friends. And once I came to that realization and I went through that mourning period, I'm fine with that. So that's how I feel about friendship.
So you're more focused on those that are really close, kind of sorting out the difference. Amy Dickinson, are you satisfied going through life with a lot of acquaintances and not so many friends?
Well, one thing I love about this caller's remark is that I totally understand what she's talking about. I think this is a phenomenon, especially with moms, if I could say, because a lot of us develop friendships around our children's friendships. And as your children grow, you tend to realize at some point that your friendships are more like partnerships with people you're sharing this commonality with. Here's the bottom line. Will you get on a plane? Like, I have one very, very dear friend. I got on a plane and I went to her mother's funeral. I got on a plane and I went to her daughter's wedding. I will get on a plane to go be with her during these incredibly important life events. We're witnessing one another's lives.
Yes.
That's what friends do.
Yeah. And stand up to do it and are welcomed to do it, maybe because of that chemistry that Alexander described that makes their attention so welcome, and as you describe it, they're so dependable. Trish in Clinton Township, Michigan. Trish, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I have a point. I became very ill. My background had been a powerful woman in advertising, and I developed unexpected, possibly fatal breast cancer. Forgive me, I'm nervous. And I found that my close friends, what I thought were my close friends, began withdrawing from me. Like they didn't know how to act around me. That I lost all my long hair, so I looked different.
Yeah.
I was a frail woman going through treatments. And I just, it hurt. And I just wanted to throw that out there.
What did you learn from it, Trish? Did you see that, did they to you fail as friends, or they just didn't have the grit as people? They didn't know how to interact, you know, with your radically changing reality?
I think they didn't know. They were uncomfortable around me. My appearance, my being so weak, where it was like, yes, let's go to the play. Let's, you know, let's do this. And, oh, this was my achievement. That I didn't boast at work, but, you know, it was clear, you know, I enjoyed my work and things like that. And I had changed.
Yeah,
I had no control over that, of course.
But we'd like to think, Trish, that that's when friends really step up, when you're just, you know, don't have the strength, when something hits you that hard. You'd like to think that's when friends show up.
And originally they did, but it was a year's worth of treatment,
and
the fade came over time.
Yeah. Trish, I appreciate your sharing that, and I'm glad that you found forgiveness about that. Amy Dickinson, is it a fair measuring stick for friendship? It's a tough one. It's a challenging one.
I would say it's the ultimate measuring stick for friendship and for people in general. And the fact is, people are very, very challenged and frightened by illness. And I do think it's a mark of someone's like deep humanity if they can show up in the way that they should. Yeah. And you know what interests me? I believe that women are more impacted by their friendships than men. Is that a terrible thing to say?
I don't know. In what way?
Yes.
Alexander objects. But let let us hear it. Then we'll argue if we will. How so, Amy?
I think that women are very sensitized to relationships. And, you know, this is just part of my work as an advice columnist. I hear from so many women who are very troubled by changes and shifts in their friendships. And just anecdotally, I think of men as being a little more like, hey, people come, people go. But correct me.
Maybe. I mean, to me, my very closest male friends have a lot to do with defining who I am. My own sense of self-definition has grown in my deep relationship with them. That would matter a lot to me if it went away or changed. Alexander, am I alone?
No, at least two of us in this world.
Okay. I think a friend.
Yes, there we are. But it's absolutely right what you said, that who our friends are has an incredibly deep influence on who we ourselves are. There's a proverb in so many countries, in Greece, in Latin America, everywhere: show me your friends and I'll show you yourself.
Well, and I don't mean their status or anything like
that.
I mean that I've kind of figured myself out in conversation with them, with the person that they are. Without that conversation, I lose some of my moorings.
Yes. And it's not only finding yourself in it, it's becoming somebody else in many cases.
Hey, we've got to go out here for just a second. Amy Dickinson, we're going to come back. We can talk gender and friendship a little more if you like. We're looking at new research that says only about half the people we think of as our friends think that we're their friends or see us as their friends. And what that says about what friendship really is, what it means. Flight of the Conchords behind us here with Friends. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Can you be friends with someone you don't entirely like? And how do you decide when someone's a friend? Does it just sneak up on you? Amy Dickinson, Alexander Nehemas, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
My Uncle John had a special friend. They dressed alike. His name was Ben. I've never seen two friends like them. They were very, very friendly men. Boom, la, la, boom, la, la, la. Boom, friends, friends, friends. Boom, la, boom, la, boom, la, la, boom. Friends, 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 friends.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about new research that says only about half the people we think of as our friends really like us the same way. And what that says about friendship, what it really is, what it means. Alexander Nehemas is with us. He's professor of philosophy, comparative literature at Princeton, author of On Friendship. Joins us from Princeton, New Jersey. Amy Dickinson is with us from Ithaca, New York. Syndicated advice columnist, of course, Ask Amy. Often featured on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You can join us as well. Have you had to break up with a friend? Was it just not working anymore? Did you just like them? Did you dislike them too much? Have you had to forgive a friend or recommit or sort of figure it out as you flew along? Lots of different angles and portrayals of friendship. Here's from the 2015 film Sisters. Amy Poehler and Tina Fey play sisters. But in real life, they're very close friends. And Poehler told the TV program Extra last year they feel like chosen sisters, better than blood.
We love playing sisters in the film. People kind of assume we are sometimes, but there's a really nice thing about getting to choose your female relationships because they have all the good juiciness of a good, deep female relationship. That's without true. The complication of actually being related.
All the good juiciness without actually being family. On the male side, maybe the ultimate Hollywood bromance, Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. To raise money for a couple of nonprofits they had founded, they offered a special trip for a special person and their friend. Here's the video they shot for the promotion. They imagined what it'd be like to hang out with the two of these who would join them.
Be like a best friend double date.
Be like just us hanging out, taking selfies, talking about how like the Sox are going to do.
Or if you have more sophisticated interests, we could talk about 19th century literature or the current state of politics in the Middle East.
Or if you don't want to have bored out of you by Ben, we could maybe switch it around and ask you some questions like, where are you from? What are you into? You got any pets?
Or I could ask you some more meaningful questions like, you know, what are your hopes? What are your dreams?
Guys, your hopes, your dreams, or what's the score with the Red Sox? Amy Dickinson, did Alexander and I persuade you that men maybe do have significant friendships, or you're still not buying it?
Of course, I never said that you have significant friendships, but what I do believe is that women freely discuss their relationships and they have the language, and I just feel that women are more sensitized to the subtle variables. But I could be wrong.
I don't know. I can't maybe declare all the subtlety. Let's see what our listeners think. Ross in Milford, Massachusetts. Ross, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Yes, hi. I want to make a comment of what I heard your woman guest, your female guest say.
Amy Dickinson, yes.
I definitely feel that women have stronger bonds and are more likely to be affected by relationships. I mean, that's been my experience. I think, you know, mostly what I hear a lot from guys is, we should get together sometime. Let's do that. And it never seems to materialize because perhaps women are better at planning and getting their planners out and setting up dates, and guys tend not to do that. So.
What does it mean, Ross, that men don't need friendship in the same way, or they just don't get it together or put the effort in to make it happen?
I think they perhaps both. They don't put the effort into it, and there isn't quite the same need that women do. And being a father and seeing my wife and her girlfriends all get together for girls' night out, and generally don't have men's night out where they all go out to a restaurant and have dinner together. It doesn't seem to happen quite as much, although, of course, it does happen. But so I would agree with her that that distinction between men and women.
Ross, you've got it. Alexander, let's stick with this gender vein for a minute here. I hear you standing up strongly for male friendship, but is there a qualitative difference? Maybe something Amy's onto here that's still there.
Well, I think there are certainly differences. But what I think is that those differences are at the level of behavior. Mm-hmm. They're not on the level of the motives out of which we engage in that behavior. And to me, friendship is much more an issue of the motives out of which we act rather than of the particular actions in which we engage.
So what kind of motives are you talking about?
Well, it's not easy to say, but if somebody acts as a friend, as a friend should, I think we say that they act out of friendship, not out of any other motive, not out of utility or out of pleasure.
Because you've got a house at the lake or something that they'd like to use.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's what I was saying before about, if I can visit you in the hospital, I can visit a patient in the hospital, mm-hmm. and be not at all a friend to them. Mm-hmm. So the actions may be exactly the same. Two people can come, do exactly the same thing. One of them can do it out of friendship. The other one is doing it out of some other motive, and that doesn't count.
Amy, you think about relationships a lot with your column. Do you think that the digital era with all the Facebook friends and all the other kinds of affiliations online is changing our sense of what friendship is, or is the bottom line of friendship still something direct and personal and untouched by digital mania?
Actually, I think that our social networking is adding layer upon layer and a level of complexity that, frankly, I welcome. When you feel you connect with people on social media who you've never actually met, but it was brought up earlier, you have mutual interests, you love the other person's work, mm-hmm. You appreciate and comment on one another's thoughts. It's a curated kind of situation, but I do think it can be very positive. On the other hand, I have been stung by, Facebook relationships that I feel are imbalanced, and it's like any other kind of relationship. You really want to feel that it's very balanced. I got a letter from my advice column recently from a man mm-hmm. who basically said, I post, things on Facebook, and my colleagues who I feel are friends of mine never like or comment, but they always like and comment on each other's. And what's that about?
Left out.
Yeah, left out. It's a new way to exclude, that's for sure.
That's got
a good point.
It's got to feel bad.
Can I bring up another thing? I keep thinking about that Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen thing where Ian McKellen was describing Patrick Stewart. And I think he got to the essence of something in that with our intimate friendships, we feel we know them. We feel we know our friends sort of in a heart way.
Yeah.
In a special, intimate way that we understand them and we know them in a way that others don't. Now, I also have to point out that I felt that Ian McKellen sort of threw Patrick Stewart under the bus a little bit. I thought that was a
little passive
aggressive.
You said he's a lovable man, a sweet man, stern exterior,
I thought it was a little passive aggressive when he said, like,
he's just as frail.
He's really frail. I mean, come on.
I'm the mighty one. Maybe he's saying,
right.
I don't know. Is there a difference to you, Alexander? You've studied friendship a lot between a sort of social connection and friendship. Maybe we should just accept that there are different levels of friendship. I mean, is it really such a bad thing to have a relationship that's online but is satisfying? And you may never get down to those face-to-face, deeply personal conversations often, but it's still important to you socially. Is that not a friend of a sort?
Well, it's certainly not a bad thing, it seems to me. It could be, but it generally isn't. And as Amy said, I think the social media have added new levels and new dimensions, if you want, to our social relationships. At the same time, I think, as you pointed out, and I think we have to really drive this point home, friendship comes in a kind of continuum of degrees. It goes from the person with whom you might have a very deep and intimate relationship your whole life to somebody whom you see only when you go to a game or when you play cards or when you go out to dinner with a bunch of people mm-hmm. Whom you don't see very often. All these are friends. It doesn't mean that to be a friend, you have to be the closest possible friend. It's, in a way, here's a parallel that I sometimes draw mm-hmm. about it. There are authors whom we adore and whom we read again and again and again through life.
Yeah.
There are authors whom we like very much and we spend one night with reading their book.
Right.
And then
it was enough.
And they're exactly. And there are all kinds of authors in between whom you see, you read, so to speak. You see, so to speak, every now and then. Mm-hmm. Jane Austen is somebody that I admire and love very much. And every now and then I reread her books. And I don't think about them in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody like Proust, for me at least, is somebody who's always with me. And a mystery novel is somebody with whom I have a one-night relationship.
So parallels so there to different sort of strata of friendship.
Exactly, exactly.
Let's go to Maine, Old Orchard Beach, Maine. Hillary's calling. Hi, Hillary, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because it's a different aspect where certain friends of mine are calling me when they're in need or depressed, but they don't reciprocate. So I've had to drop some of those friends because they're, as someone had said, seeing my energy from me.
Is it a matter of the stage of life you're at, or what's going on there, Hillary?
No, I feel like it is. I feel like it is for all of them, including myself, that we are just coming to a realization that, you know, this is what our life is. We're in our 40s, and we're starting to grasp, you know, where we should be or what we should be doing, you know. And some of them are unhappy with it, and you know, not everyone is exactly where they want to be, but there's got to be some positivity at some point. You can't just be the friend that they go to with everything being negative all the time.
And are you culling your sort of roster of friendships because some of them just drag you down now, Hillary?
I still consider them my friends, and I've given as much positive feedback as I can, but I also have to take care of myself. So I have distanced myself from them. I have a friend who will listen to me, and I listen to her, and we hardly see each other at all. But she and I have probably the best friendship in the world, and these are people who live close by that are just, they're very negative, so it's hard.
Yeah, we've got it. Hillary, I appreciate your call. Amy, what about it? I mean, pruning
Hillary brings up, she brings up a really tough situation. And here's another thing where I do believe there may be a gender difference.
Mm-hmm.
Women often wonder if they should break up with their friends. I see this a lot. And I actually just the other day, for the first time I think ever in my advice column, I suggested that somebody needed to break up with an old friend.
What kind of dynamics might bring that contemplation on?
Well, it's actually exactly what Hillary described, mm-hmm. this feeling that there's no exchange, it's not mutual, it's very, very negative, you feel judged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jane Austen example I love because I think of friendships as being like – true friendships as being like Mr. Darcy. You know, I love you as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And the balance is so, so important. And I do think that certainly in midlife, a lot of us reevaluate our relationships and do end up actually distancing and or breaking up with friends, which is very, very painful.
Have you given advice in your column on how to do that? If you see there's a mismatch, I mean, this research says that there's a mismatch sometimes. You women, others may just perceive it, may just figure it out. How do you act on that, Amy?
Well, there's always the perfect standby. It's not you, it's me. You know, our
yeah,
lives
but that
have
doesn't
grown
help,
apart.
Does it? Right.
You know, our lives have grown apart.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm not, I often feel like this is very passive, but you could say, like, I feel that you don't enjoy my company.
Mm-hmm.
You don't seem very happy with me. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I add something
yes, please.
Here?
Mm.
It's exactly right. It's not you, it's me. Is never any help. Why? Because when you say it's not you, it's me, what you're actually admitting is that you don't like whom this friendship is making you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like yourself in that relationship anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, seems to the other person, especially if they don't feel that way, like a great failure. absolutely great failure. It doesn't matter whose it is. Is it you? Is it me? The point is that when a friendship breaks, the two former friends are disavowing who they had become as a result of one another.
Why do some friendships make it through that? I mean, some friendships, I feel, Alexander, both people are so devoted to sort of diving back in and figuring out afresh, figuring it out anew, that the friendship goes on even through life changes.
Absolutely. I don't know what the answer to that question is. The thing is, each friendship is fundamentally different from every other friendship. Even if you and I have a common friend, the friend we have is slightly, or sometimes even very different, which is why, think about it, very often when we see a friend of ours in a group that we haven't seen them before, we stop liking them. Or we don't like them as much because they act in a very different way. And we do that. We act differently with different people and different contexts. And a friend, a good friend, is somebody who is capable of, so to speak, accept the different aspects of the person they like, even if they are very surprised by them.
Amy, have you found the perfect number? Is there an ideal number of friends?
Well, years ago, I liked the work of Michael Thompson, who's a school psychologist, and he's written a lot about friendships and children. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how anxious parents get over their children's friendships. Mm-hmm. And he says something that I think is so perfect and so profound. He says, oh, every parent wants to see their child surrounded by friends, but it just takes one friend.
Exactly. Exactly.
You could do worse. You could do a lot worse than one really good friend.
Absolutely.
Amy Dickinson, syndicated advice columnist. Ask Amy, of course, author of The Mighty Queens of Freeville. Amy, wonderful to have you with us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Alexander Nehemas, professor of philosophy and comparative literature at Princeton, author of On Friendship. Alexander, it's nice to make your acquaintance. Maybe we could make it something more.
I would be delighted to do so, Tom. Thank you very much.
Easy to say, hard to do. We'll see. Alexander, thank you so much for joining it. Listeners, thanks for being with us. Here's Randy Newman. You've got a friend in me. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Some other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am, big and stronger too, maybe, but none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy. And as the years go by, a friendship will never die. You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.